Okay, the Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood will come to order. Good afternoon, everybody.
Welcome.
First, we are going to open up a work session on measure introduction. So I'm opening up a work session on possible introduction of committee measures. Senator Olson.
Chair Kiltzer, I move the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills. LC 1490, dated 12-1-14. LC 3417, dated 2-5-15, and LC 3395, dated 2-19-15.
Great. Vice Chair Olson has moved that the legislative concepts LC 1490, dated 12-1-14, LC 3417, dated 2-5-15, and LC 3395, dated 2-19-15, be introduced as committee bills. And again, a vote in favor of introducing a legislative concept is not a vote on the merits or the content of the draft, nor does it guarantee the draft will be referred back to this committee, nor does it guarantee that the bill will ever be scheduled. Introduction of measures is a courtesy to get draft concepts into the pipeline. Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And they are introduced as committee bills. So, colleagues, I'm going to open up briefly a work session on Senate Bill 5. I'm closing the work session on introduction of committee measures, opening up a work session on Senate Bill 503. Just to put on the record, there was some confusion in LFO that there may be an amendment to that measure. There is no amendment to that measure, so we will roll this over to Thursday, and hopefully we'll be able to move the bill on Thursday. So if I say roll over, we can do that? Yes?
Yes.
Excellent. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 503 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 244. Cheyenne.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 244 was previously heard on the 17th. It requires Oregon Housing and Community Services to adopt a policy to concentrate distribution of general housing account funds according to the greatest need for low-income and very low-income housing. It has no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, and no such far.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Chair Kiltzer, I move Senate Bill 244 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 244 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. I think it is Senator Olson's turn to carry the bill, so we'll give that to Senator Olson. Unless somebody else really wanted it.
Yeah. The only problem is Senator Olson's last few times we've been on the floor has talked for a long, long, long time. So.
He has promised to buy us all lunch.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case,
every
fine.
Day, okay. Forever.
If you speak briefly, I'll vote for it. So.
Okay. The bill should pass.
There you go.
All right. So Senator Olson is going to carry that bill. I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 244, and I am going to open up a public hearing on two bills at the same time because they're about the same.
That bill. Oh, that's it. Never mind.
Okay, so I'm going to open up simultaneously public hearings on Senate Bill 616 and Senate Bill 617. Cheyenne.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 616 requires the Treasurer to investigate the Community Housing Trust account with the Department of Human Services assistance. It specifies the focus of the investigation, requires the development of investment strategy, and a report to the legislature by February 1st, 2016, declares emergency effective on passage. Senate Bill 617 has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It establishes a task force on housing for persons with intellectual or developmental disabilities. It specifies the composition, scope, and formalities of that task force. It directs the Department of Human Services to provide staffing and also requires a report to the legislature by September 15, 2016, and it sunsets December 31st, 2016. Also declares an emergency is effective on passage.
Thank you very much. Our first panel is Catherine White, Leslie Sutton, and Ross Ryan.
Chair Kiltzer and members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I live in Eugene, Oregon. In 1999, which shows my age, I was had the opportunity to advocate for the passage of Senate Bill 405, which created the housing, the Community Housing Trust. Because that trust was funded with dollars from the sale of Fairview Training Center, it's been known as the Fairview Trust. Just a reminder, Fairview was a large institution for people with developmental disabilities in Oregon. For almost a century, it isolated and segregated people with disabilities. It's no secret that during those years, many of the individuals experienced abuse, rape, sterilization. The institution was closed in 2000, the last individual left. The Fairview Trust was designed to bring good out of bad policy. The promise that was made in statute was a very, very simple one. The money from the sale of any property that was to be had been used as a training center was to go into Community Housing Trust, the proceeds of which were to assure that housing in the community would be available for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in perpetuity. It is very difficult at this point to convey the emotion that was felt in the DD community when this legislation passed. For many, it was viewed as an apology for years of abuse, and it was a guarantee, it was a promise that there would never be another place like Fairview where people with developmental disabilities had to live. The trust was set up in distinct and separate from the general fund. It was not intended to be general fund. It was divided into two sections. One was the corpus, which was 95% of the money, 5% of the money, and any interest that came from the trust, from the corpus of the trust, was to be set aside and made available for community housing. The administrative rules were developed, a trust advisory committee was established, and they were to oversee the trust and, quote, as it was an administrative rule, to provide grants to perform construction activities and provide equipment in homes where children and adults with developmental disabilities would live that would enhance their opportunities in the community living. Over 1,000 households in Oregon received funding from the trust between 2003 and 2010 when the work of the trust was halted. And the grants ranged from a high of $5,000 to a low of about $150. In 2011, in the midst of one of Oregon's greatest budget challenges, the entire 5% and the corpus, 5.9 million of the corpus were swept, and that was out of a total of approximately 13 million that existed in the fund in 2011. At that time, it was understood that that was a loan, and this was to be paid back when the economy improved. It was to be paid back to the housing trust. And the language that affirmed the loan status occurred both in conversations between advocates and legislators about it, in a Ways and Means discussion, and it was reflected in the 2011 DHS legislative wrap-up that it was a loan. However, in the governor's proposed 2015 budget, the additional funds were are being recommended to be swept, and that would eliminate the housing community housing trust fund that was set up in 1999 for people with developmental disabilities. And we oppose that.
If I could, if you remember, I opposed the original sweep, too.
You so, did?
Yes.
You did.
And it's probably worth pointing out at this point, Senator Winters could not be here today, but she asked me to affirm on the record that she affirmed on the record that
she did.
She saw it as a loan, and she said she wants it all paid back. She asked me to say that today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee and Chair Gelser. My name is Leslie Sutton. Today I'm with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition, which is a coalition of approximately 30 organizations across the state of Oregon who work to promote quality community integration and supports for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The IDD Coalition believes in the promise of community housing that was affirmed in the Fairview Trust. And because of this, we pay very close attention to what happens with the trust. Each budget cycle, the way the statute is written, DHS does submit a report of revenue and expenditures from the trust. And as stakeholders, we do review that. And today, we come to you with some concerns that we have about that accounting. We also want to point out that in the last 4 years, the Developmental Disabilities Program has had four different directors. And so we do think that it's time to examine this and look a little closer about what's happened here. Based on some of our information from examining the reports that are submitted to you and the governor every 2 years, we fully support Senate Bill 616 to get an examination about these funds and also recommend an investment strategy to maximize the interest and income. As Catherine mentioned, the Fairview Trust loaned $5.9 million to fund DD day programs at the time. Those are programs where people go during the day to get services. That loan has not been repaid, but more importantly for the issue today is we're not sure if there was ever statutory authority to take the loan in the first place. Catherine has made it very clear that and there was two accounts. There was 95% of the sale of Fairview was to remain in trust in, quote, perpetuity, the way that the trust is written. Further, the loan did go to pay for DD programs. And again, as Catherine pointed out, the statute is very clear. It's to pay for housing. The interest is to be credited under the statute into the trust. And since 2011, based on the reports we've seen, we've not seen interest credited to the trust. And also the 2015 report this year shows that the trust has actually lost a close to $74,000 without ever letting any expenditures go from 2011. So these are concerns that we have. And because of this, we do ask that there be an investigation into the trust, and we support the investment strategy. And we believe that Oregonians with intellectual and developmental disabilities deserve no less than a rigorous examination of this very important resource that was to them a promise that they could live as friends and neighbors in their community. Thank you.
Welcome, Russ.
I'm Russ Ryan. I am speaking on the Fairfield Trust Fund.
And today, Mr. Ryan has asked me to ask him questions to support his testimony, so I'll be asking him a series of questions. Why is it important for you to live in your community?
To live in our community is we feel that we want to fit in, and we do have rights to fit in like everybody else. You'd be nothing without us.
Why is it hard to find housing for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Housing would be it wouldn't be affordable.
If people don't have affordable housing, what happens?
We'd be either out on the streets or a group home, or we'd be either moved back to our parents or, worst case scenario, the state hospital.
How do you see the trust helping people with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
It would give them a sense of belonging that they worked hard for, and it also would show everybody that we can fit in like everybody else. We just have different challenges.
How do you feel about the trust being zeroed out?
That would be 3 to 5 years backwards.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, not questions, just a few comments, because I was here when we created the trust, and it was a promise we made, and we were all very, very sincere about that promise, because we worked together on that, didn't we? Okay. I support these bills, but one of the things that bothered me initially with the governor's budget, and I don't know if we still call it the governor's budget anymore or not, what was this sort of activity, and then some executive orders he's done relative to sheltered workshops. And for some reason, Governor Kitzhaber seems to have decided to forget this population entirely. So it's not just this, Madam Chair, but there's some other things going on that are jeopardizing the ability of this population to work in their communities as well. And these are things we need to take a hard look at.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, and I apologize for these questions because I'm really new to this committee. Do you have documentation on, so we, it's all on paper, we can prove that all this money was taken?
Senator Gelser and Senator Olson, yes, I do have the reports that DHS does submit their public record. I have them with me today as well. I just have one copy of each.
No, that's fine. I was just curious because when we go back and ask for this money, we'll say, we've got it right here, that this is what you promised, and this is what we need back. I think that would be the appropriate thing. So because I had heard you mention the fact that we taught you talk together in the work groups and all of that stuff, that everybody agreed to it. But if it's not on paper, it's a little difficult to really prove. So I just want to make sure we have it because I support these. We need to get this money back.
As a clarification, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. I thought you were talking about the numbers that I was describing some of the discrepancies. I have that information. I also have the DHS end of summary report from 2011 that does say the intent is to rebuild the corpus when the economy improves. So I do have that with me today as well.
So we're covered. Okay, good. That's what I like to hear.
By the same token, it was a violation of a trust to sweep it in the first place, period. It's not your fault. You didn't do it. But so I'm not blaming anybody in this room, but the reason I voted against it is we set up a fund, we made a promise, and then we violated that promise, quite simply.
Any other questions for this panel? Nope, seeing none. Thank you very, very much. So our next panel is Leslie's going to stay up. Rachel Simpson and Joe Wachowski, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Again, Chair Gelson, members of the committee. The IDD Coalition also envisions an Oregon where all people are valued and granted equal opportunity to be members of their community, and we definitely believe that housing is a fundamental first step to being part of your community. And we support Senate Bill 617 for the following reasons. Number one, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families want independent housing, and they want independent living options. Number two, federal and state policy is really changing to prioritize supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in more integrated and independent settings. But current IDD settings and systems and subsidized housing options are truly not available at this time to meet this rising demand. So we do support the task force that would be established under Senate Bill 617, and because it would create a strategic plan to tackle this housing issue and really focus on community integration and self-determination while moving this kind of housing into the 21st century. Current trends, as I mentioned, are really focusing on having access to independent living, because when people don't have that, they either become homeless, they couch surf, or they have to go into out-of-home placements, which actually cost much more. New federal rules do say that Oregon needs to start serving people in the most integrated setting to maximize opportunities for them to access their communities. And these rules allow people to choose where they receive their services, including in non-disability settings like apartments. And like I've said, current affordable housing is not there to meet this demand at this time. The Community First Choice Plan, the K Plan, I'm sure some of you have heard of, also allows people to take their supports where they want to have them. That means that they can have their supports done in their own homes, and they can start to build a life in their own home. Providers and adults with developmental disabilities are already seeing this shift, and they're finding that the biggest barrier is actually finding housing options. Also, you're seeing that adults and children now use intellectual and developmental disability supports to create real lives in their communities. And for many people, this doesn't necessarily include living in a group home. They want to live in their own apartments like their friends. And also the Oregon Consortium of Family Networks, which supports families raising children with disabilities, just recently did a survey, and they found that 3 out of 4 parents expect their child to live independently as an adult. This is a big change in what Oregon has been doing. And independent living truly cannot happen for these people if we don't have the housing options available for them. Subsidized housing also is tough for people to access. There's long waiting lists, and often you're still trying to find an apartment that's accessible for you. So the IDD Coalition does support this task force because it recognizes that housing for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities needs to include not only a discussion about the Fairview Trust, but a discussion about current housing stock that is in the DD system and beyond. And we believe that Senate Bill 617 recognizes that housing is a fundamental part of community integration and self-direction and determination. Oregon has made a commitment to serve people in community housing opportunities, and it's really time to modernize that commitment, and I think a task force would really, truly help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee.
My name is Rachel Simpson.
My name is Rachel Simpson.
Today, I want to tell you how I got my own apartment.
Today, I want to tell you how I got my own apartment.
Rachel has asked that I also support her in testimony by asking her questions. Rachel, when you graduated from high school and moved out of your parents' house, what kind of a living situation did you want?
I wanted to live on my own, but because of the housing situation, there was none that we've heard of.
Where did you end up living?
A 24-hour home in Dallas, Oregon.
Did that home fit your needs?
Not at all.
Why not?
Because I am 22 years old, and the home I was living at had older people than what I needed.
But you recently moved out of the group home and into your own apartment. How long did it take you to find that apartment?
2.5 years.
What was your biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge was finding the money to house house me and my needs.
How is your life different now that you're living on your own?
My life is different now because I can have friends over. And do fun things.
What's your next dream with your housing?
My next dream is to create a family and to have my own house. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Joe.
Thank you. Chair Gelson, members of the committee, my name is Joe Wykowski. I'm the executive director of Community Vision for the last 25 years. An honor to have started and been part of the organization. We provide individual supports to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to live in the community. There's over 75 people we've supported with both their staff supports, their personal assistance, and housing over that time. And during that time, the last 20 years, we began a home ownership program, an asset program for people with disabilities, because we felt that people needed that opportunity to also have assets in their life and have control over their homes. During that time, we've helped over 200 homeowners with disabilities purchase in the community, and we have over 35 community partners that we work with in the Portland metro area. Many of those individuals are in another hearing room today testifying on housing. So we've gone out to the general community to find the housing that's needed for people with disabilities. We've also been very lucky to access over $3 million in subsidies and donations and other federal and local monies from our partners to create this housing. As you probably know, many of the individuals we support, their income is 30 to 50% of median income. So we're really helping people at the lowest level of income find housing, both rental and home ownership. We found particularly with the home ownership programs that it stabilizes individuals. They get a place lifelong where they live, and they get to fix that mortgage payment. It creates incredible accessibility for their life. We were just lucky enough to finish our first prototype accessible home, and the total build was $150,000 for that cost because of working with our partners. So when we bring in those additional subsidies, for instance, money from the housing from the Fairview Trust in the past or from other partners, we can get someone a very low mortgage payment. We have 20 years of data, and we know that homeowners have been very successful. Individuals with disabilities haven't been foreclosed upon here in Oregon or nationally. I was lucky enough to be part of a national effort with coalitions to do this similar work in other states. So we're feeling that now's the time to have a housing task force to look at some of these creative issues throughout the state. We've been able to accomplish that ourselves in the metro area and some other parts of that state for those 20 plus years. And families are wanting a different approach. We've been lucky enough in the last couple of years to become part of a parent coalition effort to provide those housing resources and information to those families. And we're hearing from everyone that we want a different life. Three quarters of people want their own apartment to live in their community or their home in the community. So my proposal would be to you to look at, have that task force look at creative ways to leverage the dollars within those funds in the fund. For instance, we could take 0% mortgages, second mortgages, which Community Vision now uses widely. It's not untypical for us to give someone a $30,000 0% mortgage. They pay it back when they sell the house. These funds could come back to the fund and be perpetual and ongoing, and maybe pay even some of the appreciation back to the fund over that time. So that would be one creative option for using these monies. Another would be to leverage other multifamily units with our partners out in the community. We simply have gone out to everyone and said we don't want group housing for people with disabilities. We want a unit at a time, people living in the community, putting something on the table, for instance, some zero interest money that developers could use up front to create some of this housing, maybe even pay back over time through rent coming in. From different renters could help pay back the fund. But we need to have those conversations, and we need to have some leverage ourselves to go out to the wider community. So I would be in favor of forming that task force so we could get creative. One other additional way conversation we could have around this is we already have money through the budgets people receive through Medicaid, through Title 19. They are with a roommate without a disability. They're allowed to use a portion of their money to for housing. So we have, for instance, 40 individuals who have a roommate that they live with without a disability. It creates housing for two people. We need to explore that statewide because some of the funding's already there for individuals and families. But if we don't get to the table and get even more creative, and I'm sure there's many more things that others will think of that I haven't talked about today. We can just create better synergy both in the metro area and statewide. So thank you very much. I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Senator Cruz.
Just a comment based on your comment. The bill has the task force shell, and then it's got five items, but usually if we want to allow a task force freedom, we have different language, including but not limited to. So we may want to consider something like that, just to allow them a broader scope than just those 5 points.
I think that's true, and we've had some interest expressed from other organizations, including the Department of Human Services, that would like to be included on the task force. Right. So the intention would be to amend the bill to make sure that it allows that flexibility for the task force and to make sure that all the partners are at the table, including non-disability organizations, because this is really a housing issue before before it's a disability issue.
Madam Chair, but it also, they need to be looking at other issues other than just housing, because it's all tied together. At least the connections can be made. And so, you know, I applaud the points that are in here, but it doesn't hurt to be able to look a little bit further outside the box while you're doing that work as well. So,
thank you. Other questions for this panel? I had one for you, Anna. You talked about Rachel, living in your new house. You mentioned that you could have friends come whenever you wanted. When you lived in the group home, were you able to choose when to have company or what activities you wanted to do or when you wanted to eat dinner or what you wanted for dinner?
No. That was all decided for me. And basically, if this happened, for me not to be in a group, not to go to my own apartment, I was so unhappy at the group home. My parents were thinking about having me come back to them because I was so unhappy. Also, I would like to bring up the fact that housing isn't accessible in the way that people need them. For instance, I have a lift at my apartment that costs over $200, and there are no funding available out there for me to get help with lifts. If that one breaks down, I'm screwed. And in conclusion, I would like to say that where I'm currently from is Newport. Last place where I lived, I came from Newport, Oregon. And they have no housing, none at all. So for this to come to play would be a big step for Newport residents and people with developmentally disabled. Thank you very much for your time and your efforts.
So, Rachel, thank you very much. And two things that you said really stuck with me. The first is when you talked about the lift. I used to work for DHS and SPD, and I was on the committee that looked at the applications for Fairview Housing Trust grants. And many of the applications were for things like lifts. And one of the applications that's always stuck out in my mind was from a family. The mother was in her 80s. They were still on a wait list for support services. And so to assist her 60-year-old son to bathe, she had to drag him into an inaccessible bathtub and bathe with him, sit with him in the bathtub. And those were the types of very basic kinds of needs that this trust was addressing. You know, the cost may have been a couple hundred dollars, which doesn't sound like very much in a $13 million trust, but that really is a life-saving thing. And I think the other thing that you really highlighted, Rachel, is that housing isn't just a place to live, but I think many of us take for granted the ability to decide what time we get up in the morning or what we have for breakfast or who we hang out with or how late and how loud we have the television on. And when there isn't housing available for you, that basic freedom is taken away. And I think that's really what the Fairview Housing Trust was about. It was about saying we're not going to segregate people in an institution, and we're going to create a fund that allows the development of housing that also doesn't segregate people in our communities. And you have just really articulated that incredibly well, Rachel. So thank you for taking time to come today.
You're very welcome.
Great. Thank you all very much. The next panel is Catherine White again, now Anna Lansky. I'm sorry I kept calling you Anna, Rachel, and Jamie Dano. And we have you next.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I live in Eugene, Oregon. You've heard quite a bit about what the intent and the purpose of this work group that is being proposed by 617. I just wanted to add one other issue that is a housing resource that currently exists within the DD system and that is going to be raising a number of issues that need to be covered in that work group. When Fairview was in the process of closing between 1980 and through 2000, people with IDD were moved out of the institution into group homes, mostly up and down the Willamette Valley. And Housing and Community Services funded the construction of these many homes through 30-year bonds, which at the time seemed like a long time, a great amount of time. There was a maintenance and reserve fund that was created at the same time that these bonds were issued, and it was held in the Treasury as a part of the DD Housing Fund, not the trust, but the Housing Fund. And this was, again, separate and distinct from the general fund, and it was designed to support these bonds, to assure the value of the bonds. The ownership and the management of these homes was moved to nonprofit organizations and some service providers. Housing and Community Services reports that they hold 191 bonds for homes currently serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Over 800 people live in those homes. The bonds are beginning to expire. 47 of those bonds will expire within the next 4 years. And at that point, all the maintenance and reserve funding for those homes will disappear, and there is no authority for the state to provide support to those homes. In addition to that, the housing organizations are not required to continue to provide services to people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. There is no requirement that the equity asset in those homes stay within the DD system. Furthermore, there is some impression that, in fact, the state may be liable for reconverting some of those homes to market-designed homes that can be sold on the market and retrofit those homes. This potential bond crisis, and it goes till I think the last bond that I saw was 2029 or 2030. So there's quite a period of time. But as we say, the first ones start expiring in 2017. So this is both a crisis for the system, the housing system that serves people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but it's also an opportunity, and that's why this 617 work group is so critically important, because it allows us to develop a really thoughtful approach. How do we maximize the equity that is in these homes? How can we assure that the current residents and the safety of the existing homes, they need repair. There's been a great deal of aging and wear on these homes. We need to look at national best practices, link with other housing organizations, as Joe mentioned. We need to listen to self-advocates and families and look at how do we configure, not only look at how we support the existing structure of housing that the Department and Housing and Community Services owns, but how do we prepare for the future? How do we address the needs of a Rachel and a Ross? How do we bring people together to talk about that, use the K plan, work with those organizations that are holding those bonded properties to assure that we don't lose the equity that currently exists. And 617 will help us with that work group to have those conversations in a very planful way so that when those bonds really start expiring, we have a resource and an asset that helps it move us into the future.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Anna Lansky. I'm the Deputy Director for Office of Developmental Disability Services. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here today, and I would like to actually extend great thanks to those that spoke before me. I'm not going to reiterate the great points that have been already made. This is a very critical issue. There is great challenges ahead of us, and this is something that we definitely recognize. Housing has historically been a great challenge for people with disabilities, and especially for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And very recently, the DD service delivery system has undergone very significant changes and is facing great challenges as well as opportunities that were brought about by, you know, primary two things: implementation of the community first choice option state plan, as well as the new regulation by CMS about the home and community-based settings requirements and the characteristics that those settings have to meet. Obviously, both of those things are promoting access to community services as well as also heightening the need for adequate housing for these individuals that want to live in the community, want to be integrated, and want to have access to employment, their communities, friends, churches, you know, activities as well. Implementation of community first choice option obviously extended the services that we currently provide to a greater number of individuals, which is great. The greatest increase is obviously in in-home services for children, but other categories are also growing up. And that obviously improves accessibility of home and community-based services to people, which once again puts additional pressure on demand for housing in the community as well. Another thing that Community First Choice did is that it does provide funding for services that have been paid by funding sources like the trust, including environmental and home modifications, adaptive equipment, and items like that that support people's independence in their homes and in their communities. And it's a great opportunity for us to use the enhanced federal match that Community First Choice provides for providing services like that. So we need to keep that as a consideration as we move forward. Obviously, the home and community-based settings rule that CMS has issued recently, something that requires the states to provide the services in the most integrated community setting for the individual, the chosen by the individual, and it has to meet all those requirements. Obviously, a lot of people want to live in their own homes. It's human nature, and it's a human right. So we do need to look at innovative approaches for how to address those issues. There is not going to be one size fits all in this instance, and there's going to have to be a lot of different resources looked at and considered in this approach. And obviously, we should keep in mind the opportunities that Community First Choice provides to us, as well as other options, as well as some has already been laid out in the proposal by the advocates, and I think those are some of the great ideas. And so ODDS is really looking forward to working potentially with this task force on identifying some of these options and resources as well.
Thank you very much. Jamie.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Jamie Danieau. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. We work to improve the lives of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. We are federally mandated to assure that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families have access to services that promote the values of self-determination, independence, and inclusion in community life. Housing, safe, affordable, accessible housing is a service that helps us meet those values. The council has offered to support the task force that is created by Senate Bill 617. We can do this within our current staffing and funding structures. This is the work that we do. The council has a long history of advocating for housing services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We were very deeply involved with the closure of the Fairview Training Center. We were involved with the development of the Fairview Trust. And we also participated on the Fairview Advisory Committee, which helped distribute funds to families and people with disabilities who asked for them. And we look forward to the opportunity to support the task force and to move housing services and supports into the 21st century. And we look forward to working with community partners mentioned during testimony today.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? You have a question about a question?
No, I'm just wondering, I really appreciate the offer of the support for the task force and wonder if that will help this get through the Ways and Means process.
I anticipate that it will.
It would reduce the fiscal. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's always a good thing on a bill. Great. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And last, we have Drew Johnston from the Treasurer's Office.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Drew Johnston from the Oregon State Treasury, Legislative Director. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 616. We discussed some amendments with the chair. And basically, what we propose is to, in order to effectuate the bill better, what we could do is, instead of having the state treasurer do the audit, perhaps the state treasurer or the state secretary of state would be better equipped to do that. This is a deeper dive into the issues surrounding the trust than we're really able to effectuate. And as kind of the state's bank per se, it's not really something that we frequently do. On the issue of investing the money and perhaps putting it into something other than the Oregon Short-Term Fund, we are more than willing to have that be an option. We suggested some language that would allow it to possibly be part of the Oregon Intermediate Term Pool, which provides some better returns and allow you to keep the earnings on that account within the trust. So those are some of the things we tried to bring forward that might help effectuate what the bill is trying to do.
Thank you. Are there questions for Drew?
Yeah, Secretary of State is appropriate.
Yeah. I'm just really grateful that the Treasurer's Office was so proactive at reaching out and coming forward with some really great recommendations. And this is one of a suite of bills impacting people with disabilities that your office has just really been proactive on this session, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you. We look forward to working with you more on it.
Thanks. Anything for Drew before we lose him? Nope. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 616 or 617? Going? Nobody else? All right. So, colleagues, we have a little bit of amending to do on both of these bills. As soon as we get those amendments back, I'd like to bring it back and schedule it for a work session, if that's okay. Schedule them for work sessions in the plural, if that meets with your approval. That sounds great. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 616 and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 617. We are going to carry over to Thursday Senate Bill 659. And with that, unless there is anything else for the good of the order.
Madam Chair, good shooting this afternoon.
There's a Judiciary Committee field trip.
It's going to be interesting to find out who's the better shot, you or Senator Burdick. I'm looking forward to report on that tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to report on that.
Tomorrow.
I'm a really good shot. I have a.